You're listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit nakedbiblepodcast.com and click on the support link in the upper right-hand corner. If you're new to the podcast and Dr. Heiser's approach to the Bible, click on New Start Here at nakedbiblepodcast.com.
Welcome to the Naked Bible Podcast, episode 234, Apps and Art, with Johnny Cisneros and Joe Fioramonte. I'm the layman, Trey Strickland, and he's the scholar, Dr. Michael Heiser. We got two great interviews, so let's just jump right into them.
Well, we're glad to have back with us, Johnny Cisneros. For you longtime Naked Bible Podcast listeners, way back in episode 125, so like over 100 episodes ago, we had Johnny on to talk about some things he had created for studying biblical words, you know, biblical languages. Again, techniques, recommending tools, that sort of thing. That's his sweet spot, and that's actually why we're having him back on the show to introduce a few things that he's working on, and gladly that he's marrying some of what he's doing to our series on Colossians. So, Johnny, you know, welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike. This is fun to reconnect with you and the whole Naked Bible audience.
Yeah, well, it's grown, so a lot of people won't know who you are. Johnny and I used to be colleagues at Logos Bible Software, which changed its corporate name to the Faith Life Corporation. Johnny has since moved back to the confines of California.
That's a nice way of putting it.
The confines of California, where he's from, and he's doing some other things as far as his income and his ministry, but he's still, you know, really heavily involved in creating tools for people who care about biblical studies, which, you know, frankly, is the sweet spot of our audience. So, Johnny, I don't know how much more you want to introduce yourself, but, you know, we do want to get into the new stuff that you're creating. So I'll leave that to you.
Yeah,
want to add anything?
So yeah, you know, just that I'm excited about being able to help people use technology and understand how to use so many resources that are available to us now. Mm-hmm. And to do that with a level head, to do that with a way that is fruitful, you know, not just productive, not just efficient. But I think how we understand technology and its role and how we can incorporate it into Bible study, and to studying theology in general, is something that doesn't get talked about too much. And I'm hoping that through this episode, I can bring some insight to that.
Yeah. And listeners should know Johnny has a degree in biblical languages, and he's also you must just be about done, a doctoral program in instructional design, or is it some other technology?
It's a PhD in e-research and technology enhanced learning.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, Johnny has worked both sides of this. I mean, he's familiar with biblical languages and how to study, you know, the original languages. And then, you know, really with his doctoral work, how to take that knowledge and marry it to technology in an intelligent, useful, coherent way, so that people can get more out of their Bible. So let's just jump in here. You're working on apps. Okay, the notes that you sent me have something to do with apps. So I'm going to ask a question that only Mike would ask because he's Mike and isn't that technologically literate. But what's an app? Okay, for those people in the audience out there like me, I mean, I've had a phone now with apps for, I guess, going on 2 years. So, you know, my anniversary, I guess, is drawing nigh. But yeah. I confess, I don't use apps on my computer. I know they're there, but I do use them on the phone. But for somebody like me, what are we talking about? Like, what's an app? How does it relate to what you do on a desktop or a laptop or your phone or an iPad? So let's just jump in there.
Of course, you know, the iPhone came out, and then we started having this abbreviated form of the word applications, and we just call it apps, which doesn't stand for Apple, you know, even though they had created the iPhone and created really the platform for developing these new software applications that run on mobile devices, especially smartphones and tablets. But really, an app is a software application, and that software application can exist on different platforms. It can exist on the web. It can exist on your computer as a specific executable file stored on your hard drive or solid state drive now, or it can exist on your mobile device like a phone or a tablet. So when I'm talking about applications, I'm talking about in the broadest sense, not just on a mobile device, but on web, desktop, and mobile.
Okay. So what are the more common or leading, more useful Bible study apps today? Give us a few examples.
Yeah, there's so many out there. And I think what's always most beneficial when we talk about tools, because this is a common question people have, is like, what do I use to study? What resources are out there? And sometimes the temptation is to say, well, you know, there's actually 72 lexicons and dictionaries that you could be using.
I'm already done.
We never want the resources or the technology to be a roadblock for people. So instead of saying, you know, there are hundreds of applications out there and I'm going to give you, you know, an entire Excel spreadsheet of all of these applications, I figure
with
star ratings and, you know, what they can and can't, pros and cons and all that stuff. I figure I would just narrow this down to three of my favorite. And when I say, you know, these are the top ones, of course, you know, everyone's always developing new technologies and new platforms all the time. So what I'm just going to go with is these are the ones that I've used and the ones that I appreciate and I've benefited from the most. Of course, I think I'd want to start probably with what's most accessible. And by most accessible, I mean it's available on the web, can work pretty much in any browser, web browser, whether that's Chrome or Firefox or even Internet Explorer. Probably not Netscape, if you remember Netscape 3. Whatever.
I'll have to take that off my computer now.
You'd have to take it off your list. Don't try it on that one. Yeah, the one that I would recommend, and this is great because it's free, and there are great people behind it. I know Andy, who is the CEO of this particular Bible study tool and resource. It's called BlueLetterBible.org. And if you go to BlueLetterBible.org, really, this is a comprehensive one-stop shop for resources and study guides and devotionals to help you understand the Bible better. They have a really great approach with introducing you to a verse of the day. And sometimes it's just difficult when you go to a new tool or a new piece of technology or some other website. You can get overwhelmed, right? Where do I start? What do I do? And they've got very helpful resources here, just beginning with, hey, here's a verse with a hyperlink. You want to go from that verse to this hyperlink and then get into your study? You can start there. You can also use it to search the Bible for verse references. If that's the way you want to navigate through it, maybe you can't find quite where Ezra appears in the Bible, but this is a great way to get into it. You just search Ezra 1 verse 1, and you get taken straight to that particular point in the Bible. You can search for a bag of words. So when you're looking for things like, okay, I'm looking for places where a beast and image occur, where would I find that in the Bible? You can also search for things like phrases. So if you're looking for image of the beast, or as we find, what is it, in Colossians, image of the invisible God. Maybe you're thinking, where was that place in the Bible where I've read that, but I can't remember now. So Blue Letter Bible is a great resource that you can get immediately into. They have a number of resources that can complement the Bible too. Anything from commentaries to encyclopedias and topical indexes. This is something that I would recommend would be highly useful if you're searching even for things on topics like what is faith, what is love, what is hope. You know, these things that, you know, only these three things remain. You know, if ever there was like a study tip from Paul, you know, go for these three. If nothing else, look at these words, look at these topics, and a site like this is going to be incredibly valuable.
And Blue Letter Bible has multiple versions, correct?
They do. They do. Yeah,
so if you remember a phrase or something in the version you're using, chances are they're going to have it. And then you can search it, you know, in that version.
Exactly. I mean, many of us now, it's hard for us to be able to compare translations. But comparing translations is actually one of the most valuable things you could do in studying, because one translation may have it worded this way, and that's the way you've always read it or interpreted it. And it's just helpful to bring alongside that another translation where you can say, hey, you know what? Wow, this is also a fairly literal translation, but they rendered the word this way, and it causes us to pause or think or reflect on something that we may not have otherwise observed in a passage or a chapter even. So that's incredibly valuable. And of course, if you were to purchase all of these different translations, you know, you would be spending quite a bit of money.
Yeah. And it's clunky flipping through pages.
Oh, yeah. Flipping through pages.
There's just no reason to do that now.
Right. Very, very different times. So that's Blue Letter Bible. Really, really helpful. The next one, you know, and this one isn't known very well. It has its roots in a very academic but honorable endeavor. And that is stepbible.org. And STEP stands for Scripture Tools for Every Person. This comes out of Cambridge University. They have a thing there called Tyndale House. And in fact, Mike, you and I have worked with David yeah. Instone Brewer. Dr. David Instone Brewer is a rabbinic scholar. He studies all kinds of things around the customs and life of Jesus' time. And he has been the director and has spearheaded this particular development of this tool called stepbible.org. And what's unique about this, they actually don't have any commentaries, you know, those types of resources that explain or describe what a particular word or verse means. They're going into just the Bible, and they have this interactive concordance type of approach. Typically, when you use a concordance will tell you, you know, I'm looking up this word, let's say it's love. And every place where this word love occurs in the Bible, you're going to see a verse reference for that. Mm-hmm. That's your concordance. When you're looking at this type of resource, they have the Bible in front of you, so they're very Bible-centric. And as you hover over different words in a passage, you're looking at, let's say, Genesis chapter 1, and I'm going to hover over the word right, said, and God said. When I do that, it'll highlight every other time that same word occurs in that chapter. And so there are times where, you know, as you're reading through something, it's kind of hard to tell what's repeated, what's a theme. Let's say, for example, typically a theme or something that is important, especially at the time of the biblical authors, they would use repetition. If it was repeated, that suggests that this could be important. This is something that you should take note of and watch for. Of course, they weren't writing in chapters and verses. So sometimes the chapters and verses create these artificial boundaries for us as we read through the Bible. But being able to highlight over a particular word, or in this case with Step Bible, what they allow you to do is you can even hover over the verse number. And, you know, of course, when we look at the verse numbers in the Bible, it's helpful for navigation, right?
Yeah.
Everybody open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. Everybody navigates there. But with Step Bible, what you can do is they've created a pop-up for every single verse reference. And what you can see in the pop-up.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. That's pretty sweet. Yeah,
that's incredible, right? I mean, all the viewers are like, wait a second, I'm driving, you know.
Well, yeah, you hover over the verse number and it lists the words in the verse and tells you in the pop-up window how many times they occur. That word occurs in the book, you know, in this case, Genesis, and then in the Old Testament. That's pretty neat.
Yeah, isn't that wild? And I if you hover over it as well, you can get to those different words too. So if you not just hover, but
they're
you
live
click
links.
On the verse, they're live links, and they open you up to a brief definition of the word, for example, heaven, coming out of Genesis, and it gives me a range of meanings there. Heaven as in sky, the visible heavens, the abode of the stars, as the visible universe, the sky, atmosphere, and then heaven as the abode of God. All of those different senses of how the word is used is right there in a sidebar pane. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, I probably sound so excited and giddy about all of this stuff, but it's just incredible. You know, you and I, even 10 years back going through school, mm-hmm. people were flipping through these paper lexicons and paper dictionaries that weighed at least 5 pounds. And as you're going through it, you're trying to like sift through all of these different references to other literature just to get at something like that, something as useful as that, to understand, okay, wow, so this Hebrew word for heaven has these different senses to it. It isn't just one thing over here, and it's always that thing everywhere else. It can have different meanings, and it's so helpful to understand that as you go through the Bible and realize, okay, this is used in a different sense, and how can the context, how can the other words that occur around this word inform how I understand its meaning here?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to open another book or books. You know, it's just you just point and there it appears, you know. Yeah, that he's put a lot of thought into this design. I mean, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, they have done incredible work on this. And when you navigate through the resource and the tool, all the cross references are listed there. I mean, that's another thing that we've become so accustomed to in the print Bibles that we have are the cross references. But of course, there's only so much room you can fit on the page, and you still have to navigate back and forth to those different places. And here in these types of tools, you know, within a click, you can see the verse reference pop up and read the verse while you're still in whatever chapter you're studying at that point. There's a number of other things that can be done with Step Bible. It doesn't have, like I said, quite as many resources, study commentaries and encyclopedias. That's really not the purpose of it. It's more of a tool specifically designed for the Bible. Mm-hmm. But I've found it incredibly valuable when I want to look up just quick statistics. Where else is this word used, and how can I understand it better? And where else can I go in the Bible to understand it better? So that's Blue Letter Bible, Step Bible, and of course the last one is one that's kind of near and dear to the two of us, and that's Logos Bible Software. You know, having worked there as long as we have, and I did, mm-hmm. That's another tremendous tool. It's a lot like Blue Letter. I would say it's almost like a combination of these two free resources.
Because if you have an account, you know, and accounts are free, if you have books on there, you can you'll have your books and, you know, some of the utility we were just talking about with Step Bible.
Yeah, exactly. These three resources, the great thing about them is they all have, the first two are free. The second one, you can purchase additional resources if you want to, and you can purchase an entire, what they call a base package, that includes a set number of resources in different categories like dictionaries and encyclopedias.
And you can access all that online too. It's not it doesn't just live on your laptop or whatever. You can access it online or in a, you know, a tablet or whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing that I've done now. I've been working almost exclusively from a web browser, and being able to access these tools on the go or from my phone. They're usually mobile optimized so that you can even access the tools to the full extent via your tablet or via your phone. With mm-hmm. Logos Bible Software, you know, of course, you have the desktop version. You've got the web version that you can access through the internet. They also have a mobile application. So that's helpful to know too. There's a mobile app that you can download. You can create a free account. Blue Letter Bible, I forgot to mention, also has a mobile application. And that's, again, another great thing that you can just mm-hmm. get into. You know, I don't have to sit down, you know, log into my desktop machine, wait for it to start up or whatever. Our phones are usually with us all the time, and it's a great way to get into Bible study. And the tools are so robust now, even on a phone. It's incredible what you can do.
Mm-hmm. So what do you suggest for people, you know, in terms of strategy or techniques? I don't know which of those words, you know, applies better. What do you suggest for integrating study apps and technology into their own study?
Yeah. So anytime we start talking about things like technology, there's almost this feeling that, or it's implied that technology is replacing something fundamentally. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's displacing something, which usually has kind of a negative connotation. I mean, we've worked with professors, right, who have come in mm-hmm. and filmed entire courses. And the question that they may have is this going to replace me?
Right. Does anyone need me now?
Yeah, does anybody need me anymore? You know, we got you on video, so you're done. You can retire. You know, we usually think of technology as something that's going to replace or displace. And again, having this negative connotation. But actually, the use of technology, no matter what it is, whether it's a Bible study or something else, it occurs along a spectrum. And I think, you know, to use a very, very, very popular definition of technology, technology is what was invented after you were born. So if we're working with that definition, we can understand that it occurs along a spectrum. And that spectrum is summed up in a simple term that we use in education called SAMR. SAMR stands for substitution, augmentation, modification, or redefinition. And I hope your listeners are still with me because this will make a little more sense once I explain it. But usually we think of technology as a substitute. It can be a direct substitute, mm-hmm. and there can be no change at all. Right. So if we are integrating an application like this into our Bible study, that can be at a very, very basic level of having a digital scan of a print book. A digital scan of a print book is no different than the other version, other than it's convenient. Right now, we don't have to carry around something that's physical. This lives in some other medium. We can carry it around on our computer or our phone, take it around with us. But since it's a digital copy, a scan even, it's really just a picture, and it doesn't afford us anything that the print version already had, other than it's more convenient. When we think of augmentation, this is also a substitute. So, but the difference is there's a functional improvement, and we've all experienced this. If you have any eBooks or digital books, something like a Kindle device, Kindle books that you've purchased from Amazon, you know that has this sense of augmentation to it. It's the same content, right, that you would find in the print version, but now you can highlight. Now you can look up a definition. Now you can even search the resource. So now we're moving from substitution to augmentation. And then the other way is modification. So modification would say the technology allows you to redesign a task. So when we read our Bibles, right, we usually say, okay, what's going to be the verse of the day? Or we might say, I'm going to read through Ephesians, or I'm going to read through Colossians this morning, and I'm going to read straight through from chapter 1, chapter 4, or chapter 6, in case of Ephesians. Well, if we're introducing technology into this, maybe we aren't reading in such a linear fashion. Maybe we aren't going from verse 1 over here all the way to the last verse of the Bible. Maybe the technology, because we have all of these hyperlinks, allows us to quickly check references, allows us to quickly look up where this word occurs elsewhere in the Bible, and then we return to the rest of the book. What I'm describing, really, we do these things almost implicitly or subconsciously, but I think it's always helpful for us to be aware of these different categories, because mm-hmm. when we think of, okay, how do I use technology? It doesn't have to be something that is mystical or confusing. I mean, how many times I think we all have said, if only technology would work when trying to do something.
I pretty much say that every day.
it thwarts our plans. And the last category is redefinition. Thinking of approaching Bible study in a completely different way than perhaps you ever have before. When I can think back to going to Barnes & Noble and pulling off a resource like Vine's Expository Dictionary and saying, okay, well, I guess I'm going to find a word I want to study, and then I'm just going to start reading this article. And when we think of these digital tools, we can completely redefine how we go about studying. Well, we can take the same principles we've understood that incorporate good study, like reading the passage in context. But now we can go far beyond that by being able to navigate around the Bible quickly. We can go much further than we would otherwise. And so those are some ways that we can think about what does it look like for us to include a software application into Bible study and realize it's okay to be along these different spectrums too. So there isn't something where, if you're at the augmentation stage, you know, using a Kindle version, you know, hopefully you get to modification and, you get a larger crown in heaven, you know, or something. Yeah. Like, you know, it doesn't have to occur that way. But it's helpful to know where we are across the spectrum and to say, hey, this is where I'm at right now. I'm great with that. This is working for me. And maybe I want to explore using one of these tools and just see what would it look like if I took the same approach that I have right now in reading the Bible, but happened to do it with this tool.
If people get used to, I mean, on the one hand, you know, if they sort of tinker, you know, with some of these things, and then there's a discovery element here that they can discover that they can get some sort of information, you know, something retrieves information for them and delivers it to them really quickly. There's the discovery of how you can gather data. Then there's the discovery of, you know, what you can do with it or what a particular tool, how it presents it to you. And after a while, you know, I would recommend to people, you know, tinker with these tools, just play with them. And after a while, you'll begin to identify certain kinds of tools with particular tasks that you find useful. You know, like in my case, you know, since I have the Logos on the desktop, you know, I'll use what we call passage guides specifically because it will gather information quickly, like, okay, where is my passage referenced in some other ancient literature? Or does my passage reference some item in other ancient literature? You know, what are the parallel passages? I mean, I don't have to go hunt for things. And I just know that if I'm going to drill down somewhere, those are like two things I just want to know. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to know if it's in Second Temple literature, if there's any, you know, sort of touch point there. You know, I want to know what the parallels are, what is out there in the other material. I might want to know, is there a significant textual variant, you know, going on here? I mean, I think people need to experiment with tools just so they get an idea, a better idea of the kind of data, the kind of information they can get to quickly. Mm-hmm. And then again, they'll just begin to identify, you know, what they can retrieve, the destinations they can sort of wind up in on either their tablet or, you know, their phone or their desktop. And those things will sort of, you know, bubble to the surface, the ones that are useful for tasks that they'll do in Bible study. So tinkering is important.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, is that sometimes when we think of studying, it's something that's so serious. You know, everything.
Yeah, I'm going to get graded on this.
It's like everything can go wrong, and you know, you're one step away from heresy or something.
I do it right?
Yeah, did I do it right? And we miss out on what you've highlighted here, which is having fun and playing at this, and realizing that every time we come to the Bible, whatever tool we're using, that the purpose is the same. And that is to know God and to be known by Him and to cherish the fact that we can read these words in our own language, whatever the medium, and understand something about His being and His likeness. And as we do that, knowing that He's working through His Spirit to help us conform to his likeness and to his image. To me, that is something that when that's there and it's in front of us, you know, all of, in a sense, all the pressure's off. You know, we're not trying to, oh gosh,
how yeah. This. You know, and sometimes you can, you know, it's a profitable study, you know, quote unquote study. If all that you learn is, oh, you know, well, there's a tool that I can use, you know, like, and you sort of get lost in it. I mean, we've all had this happen to us, whether it's something in the software, either at work or on your own time, you know, you just sort of get lost in something and you don't really accomplish what you know, sort of thought you were going to accomplish, or, you know, again, hopefully you're not guilted, you know, into Bible study, like, well, that wasn't real Bible study because I didn't, you know, I can't write a paper on that topic now, you know. Sometimes, you know, just discovering something that's useful that you're going to wind up using 100 times mm-hmm. is like so much more worthwhile. And again, to me, that sort of thing is providential when you find something that is just going to stick with you. You know, I think we do really need to get away from this notion of like we're being graded for something, you know, yeah. Or, you know, and, you know, we joke a lot, you know, we did in the office a lot, like the goal of Bible study shouldn't be getting a spiritual buzz, you know, like I came away with a feeling now. So that, you know, I'm going to get points for that, or that was, I did it the right way.
Yeah.
You know, none of that is the point. You know, the point is development, it's discovery, you know, things like this, just getting to know, you know, scripture better and through that, getting to know the Lord better.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it happens in different ways. You know, you can't just sort of, you know, stick it in a mold and then that's that. And then, you know, repeat, you know, rinse and repeat.
Yeah. It has to be fresh, you know? Yeah. Keep it fresh.
So we've been going through Colossians. What, you know, and again, you noted to me when we had a conversation about doing another episode that you've been thinking about Colossians and again, applying some of what you're doing to Colossians. So, we've talked about word study, and again, in some of these tools, you know, drilling down on different words. So what, you know, give us an example, like what's a key word that you might pick out from Colossians to apply some of this to?
Yeah, so key words are interesting because, you know, when we think of a key word, it doesn't have to do with how many syllables or how many letters are in the keyword. Sometimes we say, oh, that's a, you know, justification. That must be important because
it's a long word.
I don't quite understand.
You know. I have to go look it up. It must be.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But there are different criteria for determining what could be a keyword. We talked about this earlier. A word that's repeated. Whenever the biblical authors are using a word repeatedly, even when it's used with different senses, sometimes there's something going on there where they're trying to draw some ideas together, or maybe there's even a contrast. So people are going to want to look for repeated words throughout a passage. Another thing is, part of this can be also a little subjective. If a person were to say, you know what, this word's really familiar to me, but when I think about it, I actually don't know what it means. Because sometimes words in our language are so common, and the word that I think of,
cute,
yeah, or nice, you know,
right.
What does somebody mean by that? I think of that when I look at, Colossians, and I imagine you've gone through, these couple of words already. You think of the word mystery. Mystery. Well, do we know what it means? I don't know. It's a mystery. You know, it might be a good word to pick just because. There is some misunderstanding around it. The word that I think of that comes to mind, partially because Colossians is all about the supremacy of Christ. And when you think about the supremacy, I'm thinking of, you know, that verse, Colossians 1, verse 15, chapter 1, verse 15, where we see the word eikon, which is translated in most translations as image. And if you use, depending on what pronunciation scheme you're using for Greek, you may have the Erasmian, which is eikon. You may have a modern, which is eikon. And when you use the second one, you can think, okay, so what does that word sound like? I would just ask, mm-hmm. Mike, you probably know, what does that word sound like?
Yeah, icon or something
icon.
Like that.
Yeah. Icon, right? So this is where it becomes a little difficult for us as people who are trying to understand these words from an English translation in our own language. Because immediately, we can think of how that word is used in our language today. And it's a little bit of the tricky stuff when it comes to doing word studies, because once you get to the Greek, there are so many words in English that are based off of Greek that we can assume that the meanings are also the same too. So when you think of words like bios in Greek, which can be translated life in English, and then you think of another word in Greek like logos, which is translated typically word, but we see those two Greek words coming together, bio, logos, or biology, study of life. And so, there we are. You know, you can see all of these connections between English and Greek. And sometimes that can help us to understand what a word in English might mean or the history of that word. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's the meaning of that word. And when you look at something like acorn, oh, go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say that you picked an interesting example, because even in English, you know, you come across something in Colossians about image of the invisible God. That's going to take your mind back to the Old Testament. And sure, you know, you're dealing in English, image in New Testament, image in Old Testament. But that's actually a worthwhile thing to realize, because then you can use, you know, tools to, you know, if you're in Colossians, okay, what's the Greek word for this? And you can ask yourself, I mean, there are a lot of people in this audience who are, you know, reflexively going to say, okay, well, I wonder if that's the Greek word that the Septuagint uses to translate the image language in Genesis, you know, and so it generates a question, and, you know, hopefully you it doesn't stop there. I mean, that's a great question, but, you know, people need to be familiar enough with tools that can just give you sort of an immediate answer to that. And then when you see those connections, you're thinking about Old and New Testament began in English, which is, you know, uncertain for the very reasons you're talking about. But now you actually know that there's something going on there. You know, there's some connection. You know, an ancient, you know, Jew writing in Greek used that word for that Hebrew word back there. So there must have been some kind of resonance, you know, between there. At least potentially there is. And so you're onto something. It's not just a guess based on English. You know, that word happens to be in my English Bible in both places. Right. It's a little bit more substantial than that.
Exactly. And you raise up such a good point there, because when it comes to doing these types of studies and looking like a Greek word like eikon for image, the tendency is to say, okay, well, let's limit our study just to this passage or just to this chapter or book. And really what the tools are going to allow us to do is to quickly navigate to the Old Testament. But also what's fascinating in this respect is also navigating forward to the end of the New Testament. When you look at how this word is used, especially in Revelation. So the image of the beast.
Yeah.
And it's obviously the referent is different, right? It's not referring, Jesus is not the image of the beast, but the same word is used there. And we're talking about this likeness. And when you look at what's happening in Colossians and talking about the supremacy of Christ and how that's contrasted to the image of the beast and everything that this entity does and is about, all contrary to the character and image of God, you wouldn't necessarily get that just from looking in Colossians alone, but by doing just a very quick search, either through Step Bible or Blue Letter Bible, about, hey, where does the word image appear also in throughout the New Testament? And of course, we know that the roots of Revelation come from the Old Testament. So then it also points us back there too, because of the whole creation motif, right?
Yeah. You're going to wind up back there in Genesis. And that, again, when you can just navigate in a very simple way, you know, hopefully, you know, to people doing, you know, Bible study, they're going to wonder, well, you know, I started in Colossians and now I'm thinking here about Genesis. Like, did the writer want me to do that?
Yeah.
You know, I like, is was there some planning behind that? And, Again, I think the answer to that question often is, he wanted your mind to go back there. So mission accomplished. And what might that mean? What might that indicate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating when you can bring those two things together, because you start to see that these words are also related to themes. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we mistake a word for a theme, but sometimes we also don't realize that these words are also part of other bigger themes in the Bible. Image, for example, image being tied to, you know, have you ever heard the phrase, oh, you look just like your dad?
Yeah, spitting, you know, image. Yeah,
that right, kind of the thing. Spitting image. You know, we have these types of phrases even in English. But to also realize, okay, we have this language of image and likeness, and we have the other language here, the firstborn. What is this suggesting? The Son of God. And particularly in Genesis, or not Genesis, but in Revelation, we hear that phrase, Son of Man, and how that title is in contrast to this beast. You know, it's that creation language that's being used all over again, and realizing that this imagery that's being used in Revelation about a beast coming up out of the sea, like this is almost anti-creation, you know, imagery, because where did the beasts occur or appear in Genesis? They appear.
And, you know, if you're in creation text, you're going to wind up in other creation texts, you know, and if you have good tools, you're going to wind up, and enough patience, I guess I should add, you're going to wind up like in Psalm 74 and all that weird ancient Near Eastern chaos imagery. And you're going to wind up in Daniel, you know, mm-hmm. You wind up in Daniel with the beast that comes from the sea. And that's going to take you back to, you know, like Psalm 74 and some of this, you know, other stuff with, you know, ancient Near Eastern background of Genesis 1. It's just going to, you're just adding layers constantly. And I think that obviously I'm going to be the one that says that's really useful. But I think when people, you know, study scripture, they shouldn't be intimidated by that. It's like, oh, I'm going down the rabbit hole. I'm never going to come back. You know, I forgot what my first question was.
Yeah.
You know, okay, well, you know, take notes or whatever. But I mean, this is how scripture is. This is how, if you will, it behaves. You know, mm-hmm. it's just going to take you to different layers and different levels. It's, you know, it's the, you know, peeling the onion, you know, metaphor, all that. That's good, okay? Because scripture, you know, the biblical writers wanted you to experience that, because there's just a whole lot to think about. It's not, nothing is written or occurs in a vacuum here. It's surrounded by other stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the important distinction, that when you integrate the tools into things like this, that expectation of saying, you know, my Bible study is a bus route. It takes me from downtown to, you know, the Civic Center. And really, when you start getting comfortable with the tools, and you're jumping around from, okay, so the word is used here, but it's also used over here, and then it's used back over here, and it's tied into this word. It becomes this sort of,
there's like a lot more stops.
Safari. There are a lot more stops. Yeah, there can be a lot more stops, but it's also just it's really you know, you're on an exploration, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of freedom in that. And you used this word earlier, which I love. It is the freedom to discover. When you're getting into the Bible and looking at the different words and themes and seeing where they occur, and being able to meditate on those and add, I think, too, layers of understanding. Sometimes in our culture, I think particularly the Western culture, it's, if I've heard it once, I know it. I know that. Mm-hmm. When people use those words like, I know that, when really what they're saying is, I've heard that before. It really doesn't mean they know it. It just is, I'm familiar with that. I've heard it before. And what tools like this allow us to do, and looking at scripture this way and being able to jump back and forth in between passages quickly and try to gain our understanding, is it add these layers of understanding of things. Maybe I didn't see this before, but now I'm seeing it. And I'm seeing this connection between image and mm-hmm. sonship, and then over here, creation, and all of this being tied together in some fascinating, meaningful way to communicate something about God I didn't understand before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, the last time we talked, Ian, way back in episode 125, you had created studying the Bible with word studies. Can't remember. I don't know if that's exactly the title of the course or not.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. And so I am assuming that you've come up with something new. I mean, there are a lot of people who took advantage of that, the word study course, and obviously that's still up there and still available. And personally, I highly recommend it. I get asked all the time, you know, like, can you tell us how to study the Bible? And well, I mean, I can do that conversationally. But here's something you can actually go to that doesn't require you to spend, you know, thousands of dollars on a huge software package. And if you want to go out and buy Logos, by all means do that, because it's wonderful. But the entry point is, you know, the bar is not that high. I mean, there, you know, Johnny has made something that is really, really, really useful for doing word studies. But have you added anything else to the repertoire here to what people can use for their own Bible study?
Yeah, I've created a new course. And this has been kind of a long time coming. Mm-hmm. It's a course called The Mission and Message of Jesus. So what I realized...
This is a long time coming. We you know, you used to talk about this back when you were still at Logos.
Yeah, yeah. This is something that I worked on when I was in graduate school. And I wanted to create a resource that gave people this big picture interpretive lens through which they could understand what Jesus and his purpose was about, even going back to the themes in the Old Testament, and how that informs his teachings. Mm-hmm. And so organize this around six units. But if I were to take a step back, just one here, and say, you know, really what are we doing with these courses is I realize that folks, when they go to a church or a Bible study, they may leave and say, you know what, where else can I go to learn about this type of stuff? And it used to be, you know, it's this way for us, for sure. They say, well, you go to seminary, go to grad school, you know,
yeah.
And if you want to learn more and you're thinking, boy, geez, you know, how much is it a credit unit to take classes? And
yeah, no thanks.
And
I get to quit. I get to quit my job and leave my church too. Sign me up. You know, yeah,
I have to leave all the relationships I have. Yeah. It's difficult to say to folks, okay, well, you know, you've attended this study, maybe you've gone to a conference or two, and then they want to learn more, but it's way out here. They have to take a 12-week or a 16-week course. And, you know, they may or may not be interested in actually getting credit for it. So when I'm looking at this and saying there's this gap in between maybe what people are gleaning from in church and then what's available out there at a graduate level institution, and saying, you know, what can fit in this space where it's a course, it's dedicated time, it's the stuff that we've learned but distilled into a couple of hours, several hours. So you don't have to sit through weeks and weeks and weeks of a lecture. You can take this type of course at your own pace, on demand. It's a video-based, so you can pause, rewind, all those type of things, especially when it comes to things like word studies, because people will say, you know, I wish I knew what the tools were. And then once they get the tools, they say, I wish I knew how to use the tools. And oftentimes what we see in training, any type of software training, is people going through the menus and the buttons. So here's where the menus are, here's where the buttons are, mm-hmm. but they're not actually showing a process. They're not showing, here's an approach you can use, and you can use it with the tools that you already have available, and you can follow through and get something meaningful from this. So with the Word Studies course, it is exactly that. I've mentioned the tools, Blue Letter Bible, Step Bible. I use those same tools in this video yeah. course. And then mm-hmm. I show the process of going through a word study. You can, in a sense, look right over my shoulder as we go through a word study on the English word, spiritual, which is one of those that's just so misunderstood. with how we use it today in our language. But that's one that I go through. For the mission and message of Jesus, I realized, you know, when we're looking at words, oftentimes we would be so, it would be so helpful to have the entire context of the Bible in mind when we're studying these individual words. Because you and I just went through this process where we said, oh, image, that makes me think of sun, mm-hmm, and that makes mm-hmm. me think of creation. Immediately you're rattling off Psalm 74, all these different connections. Well, how do you get there? And it would be something where, of course, well, you have to read through the Bible multiple times. And, if it takes you 5 years to read through the Bible, you know, that obviously is a lifelong endeavor. You know, you're going to be reading mm-hmm. through, five times, it takes you 25 years. But how could you get a jump start? How could you get a fast track? And I'm not saying there are really any shortcuts to, you know, knowing the Bible or understanding the Bible or knowing God. But how could we also help people onboarded with that, I guess?
Yeah. Well, there's certainly ways to speed up the process.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's just to save time and actually people can make better use of their time.
Right. And part of that is by identifying the themes. You know, if we can say, look, here are some of the most prominent themes in the Bible, and these themes are threads that can be traced all the way through the Bible. And if you trace them all the way through, you're going to have an understanding of why Jesus said what he said. I mean, it's very odd for someone to say, you're going to see the coming of the Son of Man. I mean, you know, just like we're asking you if you're who you are, and this is how you respond of all things, you know. But when you understand what he's saying and that what that term, the Son of Man, means, that it's not just something that was made up by the New Testament writers. They didn't make it up. This comes from the Old Testament. It's rich in meaning, and you can see that it has associations with divine origins in the context of Luke. It looks like Jesus using his authority to restore people, not oppress them. People who are suffering at the hand of a beastly humanity, which in this case were the Pharisees, ironically. And yet Jesus is also rescuing us from our own beastliness. You know, the beastliness being the part of us that want to use people to our own advantage or take advantage or oppress. We see this at the individual level, but we also see it in society. And looking at Jesus as this person whom Yahweh is going to vindicate and show that he was indeed righteous, even though the religious leaders of the day didn't believe Jesus to be so.
Yeah.
But it's all of these things tied up. When you see these themes throughout Scripture, and there's a study plan, there's a reading plan together with it, you can start to get an understanding of the big picture and how these things all work together, and integrated into the mission and message of Jesus course are also in-depth word studies that build upon what was already shown in the How to Study the Bible with Word Studies course, and help people get even more practice, if you want to use that word, or more time just understanding, oh, this is the process, this is the kind of insights I can gain when I have an understanding of the context of Scripture.
Yeah. You know, people who in this audience, you know, a lot of people have read, you know, Unseen Realm or the lighter version, Supernatural, or some other book, you know, that I, you know, have written. And I've often said to, you know, people like in presentations at events and whatnot, that, you know, what we're doing here is not magic. I mean, Unseen Realm essentially is about showing you breadcrumb trails, you know, and you know, you can use the whole thread theme going through the tapestry of Scripture, breadcrumb trails. This is what you're talking about, that you have to be alerted to, hey, there's a trail here and I need to follow it. And at some point in the trail, you know, you're going to hit things that you just sort of intuitively or you guess correctly. You know, it's a drill down point. You spend more time, but patterns are important. You know, tracing threads, you know, following breadcrumb trails, that's where you get a lot of this sense of interconnectivity. And so, you know, for this audience, you know, this is what I do in Unseen Realm. Again, it's not magic. You know, it's just that these things have been dropped and planted and sown into scripture by the biblical writers intentionally, again, to lead you, you know, in how to think about something. And so, you know, the enterprise really is finding those things and then looking at them in their own context. And we have the tools to be able to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this sounds really, again, really useful. I would expect no less, again, with my experience with you and just all that, you know, sort of courses through your mind about how to use technology and Bible study. Again, I'm hoping people realize this is a long conversation between you and me, you know, going all the way back. I don't even want to think about the number of years, probably 10 years, 10 or more years. Yeah. You know, because I've been at Logos for 14. So yeah, this is like a 10-year conversation of doing this sort of thing. So I'm glad you could, you know, share a little bit more, you know, about what you've created. So where can people find it?
People can go to the website, BibleWordNerd.com. That's all one word. There are no spaces or hyphens.
Aptly named.
Bible Word Nerd. Yeah. They're going to be able to check out both courses there. And as a special for the Naked Bible audience, creating a coupon that will be Naked Bible 2018. So Naked Bible 2018. And that will be the coupon code you can use for a good size discount on the two courses.
Wow. Well, thanks for being on with us and catching up a little bit too at the same time.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on the show. Mike, I really appreciate it and hope your audience got a lot of value out of it.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
Well, today we're talking with Joe Fioramonte, and Joe is formerly, and that's in his case, this is good, formerly a professor at the University of Baltimore, where he spent 5 years. He's now in Florida, St. Augustine or Augustine, however we want to say that, at Flagler College. And he's a graphic design professor. So he's got a mix of being an academic, being an artist. He also owns and directs a small brand consulting firm called Dark Square. And Joe and I have known each other for a number of years. He has partnered with me in my own branding and messaging for a while now, several years at least. And it's almost 9 years ago. He offered to help me consolidate my various sites and organize them into something more centralized. He's the guy behind the design of drmsh.com. So we've had a pretty long-term relationship, but we're not here to talk about that. It's not sort of a memory lane kind of episode. What we want to do is we want to talk with Joe today about a new project he's working on that may be of interest to the podcast audience. Now, I've said before at events and maybe once or twice on the podcast that one of the things needed for the future of the church in a post-Christian, really an anti-Christian environment, culture, is entrepreneurship. And there's a number of reasons for that. But since I think that way, and I think that's going to be really important for the future of the church in terms of hiring people and having people who make money to, you know, help ministry in the future when we come to a day when we can't have nonprofits and the culture again tries to squeeze anything Christian, you know, out of relevance. People like Joe are going to be important. So consequently, from time to time, I want to have people on to highlight either businesses or ministries whose owners are invested in my content, what we're doing here at the podcast, and also who want to do something intentional for the kingdom. So Joe's latest business that we're going to talk about today fits that mold. And it's called Anno Domini, and it lives at Anno Domini, that's AnnoDomini.design. And it's structured intentionally, and we're going to talk about that, so that one-third of the proceeds go specifically to the persecuted church. You know, he's going to be talking about what the business is, but it's business designs and traditional prints and something that's, you know, more upscale, not sort of what you would have found in family Christian bookstores or things like that. This is much more professional. So I'm going to let him talk about it. So welcome to the podcast, Joe. Good to have you on.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here. Obviously, longtime fan, so it's good to actually be on the show.
Yeah, yeah. Now, why don't we start with some of your backstory, which has a number of dramatic twists and turns to it. So I'd like to start there and a little bit, you know, break it up a little bit because there's several aspects to this. First, I'd like to hear, and I'd like the audience to hear your personal story, where you came from, how you came to the Lord. Then we'll move on and talk about how you came across my content. And then, of course, you know, drill down into what we want to talk about today. So tell us, you know, your personal story. You know, where do you come from and how did you come to Christ?
Absolutely. So I grew up in a small town called Greenwood Lake in upstate New York, about an hour north of the city. And it was, you know, I was raised Catholic. And so I grew up in a church. You know, I still loosely associate myself with the Catholic Church and will go to Mass from time to time. I really like the history and the tradition. I always had a passion for God and for the church and for the Lord. And I always had a passion for art. I was really, really good at it from a young age. I just was able to draw better than most of my peers, even as a young child, and teachers kind of saw that and encouraged it. And so I'm going to interweave my professional history with my mm-hmm. with my Christian history, because they really kind of go hand in hand. I had a close uncle who became born again and left the Catholic Church. And, you know, at 16, he was my sponsor for my confirmation, even though he wasn't still in the church. And he challenged me. He said, have you ever actually sat down and read the Bible? And, you know, I grew up going to Catholic school, you know, learned even a little bit, very, very little bit, but a little bit of Latin and the Latin Mass, and was an altar boy and all that. But I hadn't actually really sat down and read it. And so I said, no. And so I did. I sat down and I read it. And I've been reading it ever since. You know, I've probably gone cover to cover, I don't know, between 5 and 7 times, somewhere in there. And it's become a passion. And it's really kind of informed, obviously, my life, but also my work. I went to art school. I went up to Alfred University in upstate New York. It's just a phenomenal art school. I learned so much there. And I used to say that I was going to school to be a starving artist. And then I lived the dream after school. I very much just embraced that. I moved out to Los Angeles after school, and I was doing a lot of art, but also a lot of music. I did a lot of music while I was in college, and I lived in my car and literally ate out of garbage cans for a while. And that sounds really bad, but I mean, I look back and see God's provision there. I worked a lot of kind of minimum wage jobs, and one of them was working at a deli making sandwiches. And we weren't allowed to take food with us when we left, but to keep people from stealing out of the dumpsters in a big city like Los Angeles, they were all kind of locked off on a strip full of restaurants. And because I worked there, I had a key to it. So at the end of my shift every night, I actually ate really, really good foods from some very nice restaurants after work, even though I was digging them out. They were wrapped up nice and, you know, God wow. took care of me during that season. And it was an incredible learning experience, but I'm glad it's over. I wouldn't want to do it again.
Sure.
So that's, you know, the early creative stage. And after roughing it for a while as an artist, I went back to school to get a teaching minor, basically. And I went back to Alfred and I taught high school art for about 2 years in upstate New York in a couple different schools in that 2 year period of time. And New York State requires that you get a master's degree in order to maintain your license within 5 years. And so, you know, half that period had passed by and I really had to start looking at programs and get serious about that. And I had already taught myself a lot of the software for graphic design, and I had taught myself, you know, enough code to get by making websites in the summer to compensate my teaching salary and help pay off college loans. And graphic design just seemed like a really good fit And so I started looking at programs, and it was probably a longer story than is warranted for the podcast today, but through a series of events, I ended up going to the Savannah College of Art and Design, the Savannah College of Art and Design, SCAD. And I have a master's in fine arts in graphic design from SCAD. And so that's a terminal degree that opened up a lot of experience, a lot of opportunity for me. I could get much more influential, higher paying jobs as a professional designer with an MFA, but I could also teach college with an MFA. The academic community doesn't require quite so much of artists. We were able to get by with a master's. So, and that's how I ended up teaching college. I taught at an art institute in Charleston for a couple of years, and eventually landed at University of Baltimore, which was a great experience. And I'm excited to be starting at Flagler College here in just a couple of weeks.
Wow. So how did you come across me and my content? And that happened somewhere at some point in there.
Absolutely.
How in the world did that, I guess, I know you're going to say it's a fortunate thing, but it might be kind of a crazy thing too. You've given me bits and pieces of the story before, but your story, it just has so many turns to it, and I like stuff like that because I like Providence, that's a big theme, with me. So, just as much as you can, hit the high points or the low points or however we want to characterize that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And the Providence is always seems to come out in hindsight. It's always little things afterwards. You see it and you're like, wow, God really kind of picked me up and dragged me kicking and screaming through these chapters. But with your material, I was in grad school, and a real passion of mine by that point in my life was helping the Christian community with its communication skills. To this day, I'm still kind of taken back by how behind we are as a culture and a community at communicating. And we dominated for centuries. I mean, the Catholic Church was just a powerhouse of art and, I don't even use this term necessarily in a bad sense, propaganda, just getting their message out and helping people understand. And we've lost that. And, I'm very interested in the history of, theologically or even philosophically kind of turned and when and how we ended up here, but that's where we're at. And so when I was in SCAD, that was a big part of my focus, was how to learn these skills and get good at them and use them to help, organizations and churches that I share values with do a better job. Mm-hmm. And so during, another piece to this whole puzzle is I was a huge Chuck Missler fan for years, and I learned so much through his radio program. I just came across him on the radio on my commute to work years and years ago. And so when I came across your stuff, a friend knew that I was interested in Missler and really interested in the Bible, really, ultimately. What impressed me about Chuck was that he delved into all the stuff that nobody else would talk about. And I would read it and be like, what the heck does that mean? And, at least Missler was a guy who would get into that and try and address that. And, part of that was some of the alien stuff, which I'm not super into or interested in. It is interesting, don't get me wrong, but I don't spend a lot of time in that area of research or study. But somebody knew I was into that kind of stuff. And they said, you really need to check out this UFO conference that this guy is speaking at. The other two, they're okay, but this guy Michael Heiser is really, really good. He's Christian. You got to check that out. And I don't even know what it was. It was some Roswell conference that you did, and this is pushing
probably Ancient of Days. Yeah,
maybe. I don't think it was a Christian event. I think it was two other secular guys. But anyway, I heard your stuff, and I heard you talk on it, and I was like, whoa, I gotta find out who this guy is. And I just started looking up other interviews you had done and some of the stuff you had written back then. I don't even think you had any major books out. You had the two powers in heaven, or it was basically your doctoral work, I think, online in a PDF or something like that. And
I probably had the Sitchin site, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Sitchin stuff was again interesting, but not super interesting to me at that point. But the other work you were doing was just, I loved Missler, but you took it to a level where, you know, he just didn't have that expertise and background and the language expertise that you had. And I always appreciated about him that he always said, don't take my word for it, you know, go out and read it and study it for yourself and pray about it. And, you know, don't take my word for it. And you had a similar approach. You really impressed me with how you said, this is what we know, you know, anything else beyond that is kind of speculative, or, you know, it's maybe informed by tradition, but here's what the original text material we have says, and this is what we conclude from it, what we can conclude from it. And here's other pieces that, you know, you might be able to say could be true, but that's it. You're just, the level of intellectual honesty that you brought to the conversation was very refreshing. And it's, I find it difficult to come across, difficult to find. So I was hooked. And then, you know, I looked at your material online and it was great, but it was kind of tough to get around and find all the things you were doing. You were at that point, I think, just kind of winging it with WordPress installs for different topics you wrote about. And so I sent you an email and you got back to me, and that was it. We worked together and put it together.
Now, you've told me before that what I do with, you know, scripture, you know, mm-hmm. basically trying to convince people to, you know, read it in light of its own context, as opposed to mm-hmm. imposing some other context, that's analogous to what you do and want to do. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I find the work that I do analogous to your work in two ways. You know, one, understanding context of the ancient Near East and when these books were written, how people understood them, what are the other influences that are directing that kind of information and the styles and all that. You know, I'm a graphic designer, a brand consultant, whatever. Mm-hmm. And
it's media.
Yeah, it's media. And people tend to think about it as making things look cool or pretty or professional, you know, tack an adjective on. But really, when it's done right, it's communication. And in order for that communication to take place, you really have to do a tremendous amount of research to understand how people are using certain visual symbols. What do certain combinations of colors and typefaces mean? What's the history of the typeface you're using and how is it understood? There's the reason anybody understands anything is their experience with it. The reason we all know to stop at a red light is because we experience being told that and seeing that. You know, if you drop somebody from another planet in an intersection, they wouldn't know what to do. And, you know, it's very, very complex and dynamic how these systems work and collide with each other in different subcultures. You know, but I tell my students, you know, probably 80% of the work that I do never sees the light of day. It's research. It's figuring out what combinations of colors and fonts and photographs and typefaces and all these things, when you put them together, how are people going to understand that? And sometimes it looks trendy or cool, you know, whatever you want to call it. More often than not, it should, but sometimes it doesn't. I think the more important thing is understanding these really complex systems of context and how people are interacting with symbols and the meaning they're deriving from it so that you can get a message to them more effectively. And so that's, you know, the first dynamic that I see. You're really helping people do that with the Bible. You're helping them understand all these other cultural factors going on that lets them have a better, richer, deeper understanding of what the text actually says that modernity doesn't really have to offer. When I'm working with businesses, putting together a brand campaign or some kind of a marketing plan, we're looking at, you know, this is trendy right now in television and music and also in design, and here's what's going on in politics, and here are some of the colors that are being used, and oh, there's this historical thing that comes into play that's still kind of shading how people see this particular thing. And, you know, we're looking at all these things and testing them and in focus groups and trying to figure out, all right, we want to get our message across without any faux pas, without any kind of coloring from other events or things that are out there. How do we differentiate from competition? It's getting that context and helping companies be more effective in their communication. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a big part of it. The other part of it is you talk so much about being God's imagers. And that's another dynamic to what I do is, you know, I'm working with companies on their brand, you know, their type palette, their color palette, bunch of rules about how to treat their logo. But I'm creating images or logos. You know, I love that parallel of the logos, the word of God. I'm doing this for organizations. I'm helping them come up with that word, the name of their company or the mark of their company, the image of their company that represents their value set as an organization to the world. And so that's just another little dynamic there that I think is kind of related to the work that you do that I find really fascinating.
Yeah, that's interesting. So let's shift to talk about this new thing that you're into, because I mean, I know enough about it to know that what you've just said, there's a lot in what you just said that has gone into this new thing called Anno Domini. Of course, that's Latin for the year of our Lord. Tell us about the new concept, the new project, the new business. Describe what it is. You know, what's the work? What are you actually doing? What does it look like? How are you making things? What are you making?
Absolutely. So Anno Domini is it's a side project that kind of stems from my need to get off a computer. I spend easily 80 hours a week staring at this machine, and I'm a fine artist at heart. That's where I started. And so this is a fine art endeavor. It's traditional printmaking. So there's a hands-on quality that is really beautiful and rich, and just it's just so much more than a computer printer can really give you. It's the hand of the artist in the work. And so it started off as a way for me to get off the computer and relax and clear my head a little bit. And it just comes out of me when I'm doing art for myself, it just ends up being Christian in nature. And so they're for now, they're prints. These are designs that I've created. There's different subject matter that I kind of cover. It's very traditional, and it certainly has a Catholic flair to it. And it's just part of my, you know, creative DNA and my history growing up, but it's very traditional. And these are block prints that are made in the style, kind of a hybrid of some contemporary techniques along with very, very traditional techniques that are about 500 years old. And so I have an intaglio press, which is a hand-pulled big metal cylinder. And I cut these designs into a big block of wood.
Yeah, you really are going back.
Yeah. No, they are handmade. And then you ink the block and you put it on top of your paper and you crank it through. And the result is a really nice, just black and white. And I just mean that in a AB kind of way. The ink is black or blue or whatever. And then the paper is whatever color it is. But it's very simple, elegant design. It's got this third dimension of being pushed into the paper that it has a completely different quality. And it's kind of come back, this style and some of these traditional printing methods in recent history, especially in things like wedding invitations or special events. There's just a values connection that a human being made this. It's not mass produced. I can't print 5,000 of them. I could, but it would take me forever.
Right.
You know, the block itself takes hours and hours and hours to design and to cut. And then each print individually takes about, 5 to 10 minutes a piece. So they're limited, they're special, and there's just a really nice physical quality to them that you have a hard time getting.
Give me some examples of what you are printing.
Absolutely.
What's the subject matter?
So the one that I'm really excited about, I've been working on for years, getting the design right, and it's really helped me kind of perfect the technique a little bit, are just four gospel representations. So you have the tetramorph, the lion, the ox, the eagle, and the man.
Yeah,
and there's different traditions on which one is assigned to which. And I've done a ton of research on that. And it's really fascinating how Irenaeus assigned them first to the Gospels. They show up in scripture as early as Genesis when Jacob is naming his 12 sons. And Augustine came along and he kind of shuffled them and said, no, they belong with these Gospels. So there's, I picked one tradition that I tend to lean towards too. And each gospel has that particular ensign for the gospel, the name of the book. And then underneath in typography, really historically set typography, you have every single name and title for Jesus that shows up in that particular book. And so that's
pretty cool.
they look really nice. And I've gotten a great response from the people that I've shared them with online, just friends and whatnot. And
well, you've actually sent me, I can't remember which one, or I don't know if it was one or two of them, you know, like samples. Yeah. They looked pretty sweet. You know, when we went to Israel, we actually saw some of this kind of stuff in some of the churches, which is, you know, kind of obvious, you know, that you'd, mm-hmm. you'd run into it there. But, you know, the evangelist, i.e. the gospel, you know, mm-hmm. person, and you know, depending on where you were at, there would be some visual symbol or sign that would be associated with it. You know, so you actually do run into it in these very ancient, you know, sort of contexts. You know, in the Holy Land, of course, it's typically, you know, one of the churches.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all over the ancient world. It's all over the Bible. They show up from literally Genesis right through Revelation, and you know, half the books in between, I think. So it's a fascinating little mm-hmm. study in symbols and how they've changed and evolved over the centuries.
How many do you have on the website?
Right now we have the four gospel prints are up okay. there. So people can see those. And we also have digital versions as well. So I've created digital versions, and the idea is that if somebody wants to spend a little extra money on a more luxury kind of an item, a really nice handmade print, they can do that. But if it's a little out of budget, or you wanted to buy all four and that was a little pricey, there's a digital version that is a very nice production as well. It doesn't have that third dimensional quality of getting pressed into the paper, but they're very nice prints and they're a little more accessible, a little less expensive. So mm-hmm. I wanted to reach a couple different price points because I think people would just enjoy to have them as a talking piece to bring up a conversation about the titles of Jesus in any particular gospel and their faith.
Now, the prints that you have for sale, of course, the goal that you've mentioned, you know, to me, again, in our conversations about this, which, of course, has led to having you on the podcast, was to raise money for the persecuted church. And you have a particular model for doing this. So what's the plan?
Yeah, I'm calling it the policy of thirds. So the idea, the concept, the business model is that any art sold through this little venture called Anno Domini is split into thirds, where one third of the money will go to the artist doing the art. And my hope is to have other artists involved in the coming months and years. So it's not just me. I'd like it to be more of a thing than just my artwork. Mm-hmm. A third will go to the organization to help with how it's run and organized, the overhead of doing some marketing. Art supplies are really expensive. So a third will go to that. But the important part, And the reason I kind of took this out of just a hobby that I did to something a little more ambitious was I want one third of all the profits to go to helping the persecuted church. So the idea is, you know, you're friends with John Leffler, and I've known him for years, and I helped him with his site and his branding quite a while ago. And him and his wife are very, very involved with helping the persecuted church. And so I've spoken with them and the idea is to use this as a way to raise money for different cases that just arise. There's always stories in the news of some pastor who is mm-hmm. in jail, and it takes money to get them out of there into a sanctuary country. And, you know, that's something they've been very active in, and they're very helpful in helping me, you know, find good organizations to partner with and to donate money to.
Yeah, I know he's put a lot of time into this. When I was out at the last Missler conference, mm-hmm. I met John, and I've since been on his Steel on Steel, you know, show mm-hmm. a couple times. But at the conference, and then at, you know, off the air in the show, we've actually talked about some specific. You know, I'm not going to give geographical locations here or anything like that. But there, you know, listeners should know that this isn't just sort of theoretical help. John has been directly involved in putting people in safe houses, you know, that sort of situation, moving them around like pastors, you know, that again, unfortunately, some of them get caught, they get arrested, and they languish in prison, like we've been hearing about in Iran, you know, lately. But mm-hmm. no, John has been directly involved in moving people like that around, and there is an expense to it. You know, he has to either use his own money or get in contact with people. I know with McLeod, you know, our nonprofit, I've told him, look, you know, if you need XYZ, you know, dollars to you know, move somebody around or whatever it is, you know, you know, we're out here now, you know, that since we have met. So it's very, what he does is really in a very concrete way and in a number of settings, you know, boots on the ground kind of stuff, you know, but it takes some resources to do that kind of thing. And he has vetted a number of people, mm-hmm. In various places to do this kind of work. So it's, you know, it's legit. This stuff happens and resources are necessary to help these people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, John and Carol do fantastic work. I've been impressed with the stuff they do, and I don't even think they talk about it a whole lot. And it's just amazing. And you know, this is something I enjoy to do. I mean, I feel so incredibly privileged to help. I mean, I read the New Testament, and the really truly blessed people are those who are suffering for the gospel. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the situations that some of these people have lived through and have stayed faithful through. And for mm-hmm. me to be in my garage making artwork, just doing something I love, and to be able to give a portion of that to helping their situation, it's really humbling. It's really,
yeah. Well, it's important that you know who the people are on the other end.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just, you know, going to overhead or something like that, you know.
Right.
But yeah, that's pretty important. So that's just something, as I do events and talk to people, I love to meet people who are doing sort of off the radar kind of ministry, mm-hmm. you know, and it, you know, when you get somebody off the radar like that, it really is more focused,
yeah.
in that sort of way. So I kind of look for that sort of stuff. So when I met John, it's like, oh boy, you know, here's another one.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's really worth, you know, keeping an eye on and contributing to. Now you, how do you hope to get other artists involved? I mean, there's obviously there might be some artists in this, you know, the podcast community. You know, how are you going to try to do that? You know, just to, you know, wave the flag, I guess, or hang the shingle, if you want to use that metaphor, to alert people that you're out there and you're looking for work. Good, you know, good artwork that can, you know, fit in with this model. So how are you going to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, right now it's an extremely small operation. It's me and our friend Rich Baker is helping mm-hmm. me with some of the operational stuff. And so there is a page where people can submit their artwork and some context for what their history is and how they kind of think about their art and how mm-hmm. it fits into our mission to help the persecuted church, and also some of the historical techniques of producing art that Christianity just has such a rich history with. So, you know, we'll see. This is kind of the big kickoff. I've had mm-hmm. this set up for a little while, but you know, we've been talking for a while about, you know, doing this interview and putting it out there. So you have bigger reach than I have with just my little website. So we're going to see what happens. There's guidelines on the submission form as to what we're kind of looking for. And so, you know, there's a lot of great artists out there. There's a lot of great Christian artists out there. I don't want to sound like I'm downplaying all Christian artists out there with some of my comments earlier. I think we need to do a better job of kind of putting ourselves out there and communicating as organizations, but that's not to say there aren't fantastic artists out there doing really wonderful work.
Yeah,
so
the art community isn't the place you'd look for serious Christians. So this is a good outlet.
Yeah, no, they are out there and they're doing fantastic work. And my hope is this becomes a place where some of us can get together. We are focused on kind of, again, historical techniques and making sure there's good thought behind how they're doing their work and what it means and how that ties to the mission of the organization and the history of the church and art, because there's a lot there and it's very rich. You know, we're probably not looking for experimental video artists. And I love that stuff. I mean, that was kind of what my undergrad experience was all about, was new media and very avant-garde stuff. But this is much more rooted in history and the tradition of the church.
So why don't you share the website once more as we wrap up, just so that people are reminded where to go and to tell people, you know, tell their friends where to go.
Absolutely. It is annodomini.design. So it's a .com. It's not a .com. It's a .design. yeah. And there's a link on drmsh.com. Seems yep. how I have access to do those things. I put a little banner up probably it's about last there. Week.
Yep,
it's we've there. Seen a little bit of traffic. Yeah.
Good. Good. Well, thanks for coming on, you know, with us to introduce this, and hopefully, you know, people will not only visit, you know, to get interested in it, but will actually, you know, buy things and submit things, you know, so that you can, you know, you have more to work with here.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Yep. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we appreciate Johnny and Joe for coming on to the Naked Bible Podcast. Please go support their endeavors if you would. Next week, we're going to jump back into the third chapter of Colossians. And with that, I just want to thank everybody for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. God bless.
Thanks for listening to the Naked Bible Podcast. To support this podcast, visit www.nakedbibleblog.com. To learn more about Dr. Heiser's other websites and blogs, go to www.drmsh.com.